Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you today?
Absolutely super, Ron. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just as good as you are. That's for sure. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch because, you know, launches can be scary. And we always like to talk to folks before their launch and during their launch and even after their launch. This morning, we're featuring Rosemary Iskowich of Dipe & Go and also Edie Tochin, her mentor. But before we get started, Bill, I'm going to thank today's sponsor, which is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your invention and connecting you to the resources you need for success. And we really appreciate their support. Well, we're going to be talking with Rosemary Iskowich today. And she's got a children's product, and Edie's going to be talking to us about the safety issues that are they're dealing with all of that. And welcome to the show, Rosemary and Edie.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Rosemary, Dipe and Go. It's obviously a baby product, but you know exactly what is it and why did you invent it?
Dipe & Go is a baby product that has been developed for the parents on the go. And what it does is it enables parents to quickly change their baby in the back of their SUV or minivan or other hatchback vehicle. And instead of having to dig through their diaper bag to find all their supplies, it'll be right there in their hatch. So if you open up your hatch, the Dipe & Go would attach to the inside of the hatch. You open it easily with one hand, and all your baby changing supplies are right there ready for you for baby to get a nice clean change. The reason I developed it was when I had my second child, I realized that I was on the go more than ever, and I found myself changing my second child wherever we were at the time, whether it be the park, running errands, or whatever the case may be. And I really didn't like using any of those public restroom changing cables. I've always kind of asked myself when the last time was that those were cleaned, and I don't like the answer. And I just found that it was very convenient to clean the baby, change the baby in the back of the hatch. So that's where the idea came from.
Well, that's what I should have had when my boys were younger, and I goofed.
Yeah, that's right. So you said it's for the back of an SUV. Would it work with the back of a van also?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've seen folks use it in the SUVs, minivan, hatchbacks. It's been suggested that it would be great for a camper. I've not gone in camping in an RV, but I think it would work perfectly. And a lot of people are using it in the back seat of the car and have told me that they unattach it from the Velcro and take it with them on trips, whether it be to grandma's house or to a hotel. So it's really multi-purpose.
Okay.
Is it something that could be used on airplanes, Rosemary?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. Well, what were the initial steps you took to really get this process going, and how did you get started?
It's been a very long process, and I've made some great decisions along the way, as well as some sizable setbacks. But one of the first few steps that I've taken was to just find out, first of all, if the product even existed. And I went about that by doing a Google search, a patent search, went to the government website and searched there, just tried to look around anywhere I could to find out if there was anything comparable or competitive. And then from there, I took steps to complete a provisional patent application and really started to just put my thoughts together on what the product would look like, developed a prototype, and really went from there.
Okay. I mean, did you go to stores like Babies R Us and things like that?
I did. You know, it's so easy now with the advent of the Internet. You really don't even have to go to the store itself. You can just use your Internet search engines and search stores, search the web, and just see if you can come up with anything. And I put in all kinds of different phraseology just to see what would come up. And I did not come up with anything similar, so I figured, you know what, let me put together a prototype. I don't sew, and I'm really not very handy, so I literally cut some fabric in kind of inexact measurements, just what I thought would be a good place to start, and pinned them together. And from there, I took it over to a seamstress who was kind enough to make some prototypes for me. And that's where I used the prototype myself for quite some time, and made sure that I was happy with the product and gave some samples to friends to do the same. And from there, I really started contemplating whether or not I would want to license the product or manufacture the product or what the next steps were going to be.
Okay. Well, when you gave some to your friends, did they give you some useful feedback that ended up in modifying the product?
You know, the product did not get modified too much with the exception of the fabric. When I created the prototype, there was the fabric in the polyester that I wanted to use was limited, so I used some solid colors that were available. But when we went to manufacture, we used a pretty pattern that would be appropriate for babies and that moms and dads would like to see in their car. So that was one of the bigger changes. The actual product itself was very, very close to the prototype.
How about that? Well, why did you decide to manufacture the product yourself? What was the thought process in that?
As a newbie in the market, I had put out a lot of feelers. I had contacted a lot of folks, and it seemed as though because the product was not something that people were familiar with, I almost felt that I needed to do, if you build it, they will come sort of thing. What ended up happening was through all the emails and contacts that I made, I ended up speaking with someone from Babies R Us, and they told me that they were interested in the concept and they would consider it, but they didn't want to private label it, so it would need to be something that was manufactured. And at that point, I said to myself, this is something that I think I'm going to give a shot to. And I started investigating the manufacturing process.
Okay. Well, Edie,
Rosemary, it leads to a real interesting question. As I know a lot of my customers around are always wondering how you can connect with a retailer or, a customer the size of somebody like Babies R Us. Can you tell our listeners what you did to find the person, the right person, and how you did it?
I sure can. I just use the internet for everything. I search people's names. I search out contact information. I use social network, whether it be Spok, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. The names and the information is out there. If you are willing to just kind of sit at the computer and work your angles, make phone calls, pick up the phone, speak with an operator, not be afraid to ask for what you're looking for, whether it be an email or a phone number, you can get to the right person. And oddly enough, from a lot of retailers, I've gotten to the right contact by just sending a general email to their inquiries general email box, and I've literally had people get back to me with contact information. It's funny, but it's not as hard as I think people think it is.
No, you're absolutely right, because I find that myself. It's really interesting. And you've mentioned four different pieces of social media, and most of our listeners have probably heard of LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, but I don't think they've ever heard of Spok. Tell our listeners about Spok, if you could.
Sure. Spok is also similar to LinkedIn, and I don't know that it has taken off to the extent that LinkedIn has. I believe that the Babies R Us contact that I received was through linking up with someone on LinkedIn, and then from there, the person that responded to me put me in touch with another person. So I don't know that it was Spok that got me in the door on that one, but I'll give any of them a shot.
Well, I know, Ron and I both have probably close to 500 contacts in LinkedIn each. And you start looking at the connections that those 500 have and then go down even a third level. And I think we're into the 10 million range of people.
Fantastic.
That sounds right. We've had Edie Tochin on the show before. She's known as the sourcing lady. How did you get in contact with Edie and enlist her to help you manufacture your product?
Able to receive Edie's contact information early on in my venture. And I will tell you this for the folks, as folks that are listening, I should have used her the first time. I did make a few mistakes using some different avenues that didn't pan out and ended up being very costly. And I came back to the sourcing lady, Edie, and I ended up connecting with her after a few items that I had been working on had gone kind of sour. And I said, well, let me give Edie a shot. She seems to be the mainstay here. And we connected, and she's just been fantastic to work with.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, Edie, what's the most important first step for a person in manufacturing a new children's product?
Oh, okay. That's a really good question. Ever since 2008, when the government issued the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, and I believe we spoke about this on the last time I was on your show, the government began to crack down on problematic children's products, recalls for toxic chemicals, plastics, lead levels, choking hazards, things like that. And before that, prior to 2008, it was never an issue. You know, if you were a good manufacturer, you would get some tests done. But now it's a law. And so the first thing that you must do is have what's called a product design evaluation done with a Consumer Product Safety Commission's accredited laboratory. They will basically tear apart your product for every imaginable issue. They will give you a thorough report with various sections that you will use for every aspect of manufacturing and packaging and, you know, everything, you know, every phase of developing your product. It will recommend modifications if there are certain safety issues or red flags. If, you know, a seam may cut the baby, or if you're using the wrong type of dye or things like that, they will completely and thoroughly, you know, indicate all of that. The second part of the report will give you a list of production testing, both mandatory and optional, for when you go into production. And that goes for whether it's done in the United States or China or Russia or any country that you're having it manufactured. It's still a law for when you bring it into U.S. commerce. Okay, so that's the very first important step before you begin to manufacture.
Okay. Well, Rosemarie, once you started working with Edie, were you aware of this law and all the requirements?
I was aware that the laws existed. However, I did not understand the details of them and what the requirements would be on my side. And that was a big reason why I wanted to work with Edie, because I felt that she would be able to help me navigate the system and keep me from making mistakes that would be costly. And also, the safety was always my number one concern. Since it is a baby product, I wanted to really follow the letter of the law and make sure that babies would be safe using my product.
Yeah, because I tell people when they invent in the baby or children area, that the good news is it's a baby product. It's a children's product. There's lots of them. The bad news is that there's a lot of rules and regulations.
Yes.
That's for sure.
That's for sure. Well, Edie, what's the second step that people should take with a children's product?
Well, understand and develop a relationship with your manufacturer. Quiz them, you know, screen them, check references, and make sure that they understand the report. What I do, since I work exclusively with China factories, is I have excerpts from that report that we spoke about with all the regulations in it. I have the tests that the factory is going to need to do translated into Chinese. Now, again, of course, obviously, this will apply even if you're having it done in Spain or, you know, wherever. have the format of the report and key issues translated into whatever language you need it to be translated into. And if the factory gets it and you get a good counter sample and they can guarantee that the tests are going to pass, then you that's the factory you're going to want to use. Okay?
Okay. And how can our listeners get additional information about the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act?
Well, they can certainly contact me. My email is EGT, like Edward George Tom, EGT@warwick.net, WARWICK.net, or my website, EGTGlobalTrading.com. And the other, if they really feel brave, they can go to the Consumer Product Safety Commission website, but it is a little difficult to navigate, but it's chock full of information. That would be C like Charles, P like Paul, S like Sam, C like Charles, .gov, G-O-V.
Okay. Super. Well, Rosemarie, I know you started off, you know, letting some of your friends test it out and everything. How are sales doing today?
The sales are doing very, very well. We launched our first product, the first exact output, if you will. We received our output in April of 2010, and from there we immediately were on babiesareus.com. We have expanded to include several other retailers, the Babies Gallery, .com, as well as their stores, several boutiques, CSNstores.com. We are working with a major baby cataloger right now, looking to launch for the summer of 2011, as well as some major drugstore lines to launch for the new year as well. So considering it's been less than a year, I think we've made some great progress.
Well, that sounds super.
You have made great progress if you've done all that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and how did it go from one retailer to another? I mean, how did, you know, was that that they found you? Did you find them? I mean, how did that work?
I have found just about all of them. The Babies R Us contact actually, as I talked about, I had the initial email and then did not touch base with them again until the product was just about manufactured, and I was at the ABC Expo, not this year, but the year before, and just so have it that they stopped by my booth. And at that time, we connected. So that contact came that way, through the ABC Expo, but also having previously contacted them. Some others have come from some industry advertising that I've done, but the majority have just been me pounding the pavement as far as contacting. I mean, there will be days that I'll send out 100 emails or more, and you might, you know, just get a few percent that give you a call back, but it's not such bad odds if you're going to be able to place the product.
Okay.
Rosemarie, you mentioned the drugstore chains. Are you looking and talking to the real big drugstore chains or the regional drugstore chains?
I'll talk to anybody who will listen, and absolutely we're looking at some of the really large ones.
Great.
Well, you mentioned
what about packaging, Rosemarie? How did you do your packaging, and was that involved with working with Edie as well, or what?
Edie worked with me to review the packaging. She helped me to make sure that we had all our T's crossed and our I's dotted as far as what was required on the packaging. And then for the actual artwork, I used a great contact that I have that it does creative, and if anyone needs someone, they can definitely contact me for that information. Definitely Edie was pivotal in reviewing the requirements for the packaging, because not only are there requirements for testing, but there's requirements for packaging and labeling as well.
Okay, well, you mentioned trade shows. How important do you think it is for folks that are inventing products for babies to actually go to the trade shows like ABC?
I think it's huge to attend, but I think if you're going to attend, you better make sure that you have your ducks in a row. I definitely think that you can attend and you can do it. You can do it conservatively. You can make a ton of contacts. You can have a beautiful booth. But you need to really be ready to rock and roll when you get there. It is an overwhelming experience. The ABC Expo is a phenomenal show. It is huge. So for someone who has never really done a retail trade show before, to step inside a million square foot trade show and realize that they need to have their booth set up and get rolling, it's pretty huge of an undertaking.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I see a lot of people at the different trade shows that we go to with my company, and they're just also just sitting in the booth. And I would bet you, Rosemarie, that you don't sit down in your booth, that you're talking to anybody that walks by, are you?
Absolutely. Talk to anybody that walks by. I talk to my neighbors at the trade show because they have contacts and they know people, and they're a nice resource as well. But absolutely, handouts. Be friendly and just willing to talk and willing to, you know, just provide a sample or whatever the case may be. Kind of a little funny thing, the one time that I left the booth to go get a sandwich was when the head buyer from Babies R Us came to my booth.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I barely left the booth for 3 days to go to the bathroom. And, you know, you miss somebody. So just goes to show you.
Yeah,
I always try to, when we do the shows, I always try to have someone there all the time and plan for somebody to go to the bathroom, because I can't tell you in my sales and marketing career how many times I just almost missed somebody or did miss somebody.
It's so true, and I did have somebody at the booth with me, and she was able to handle the situation, but, you know, when you have your own business and you've been working on a product for however long, you just don't want to leave that type of sale in somebody else's hands, although I will say she did a great job.
How long did the whole thing from the start to finish take you, Rosemarie?
It's been quite a few years at this point. When I first had the idea, I'd say a good 3.5 years ago, and I spent a lot of time doing the initial phases, which were the patents, goods, stuff and the prototypes and all that, and trying to see if I could license it and do it on my own. But since the time that I decided to manufacture it myself, I'd say from that point, it's probably been about a year and a half.
Okay. So it came out to a little over 3.5 years then, total, from beginning to end.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's real good. Mm-hmm. And are there other products other than Dipe and Go that are in the back of your mind or under development?
I do have a few other products that I am looking at, and I'm also looking at assisting others get their products launched and to market and make the sales contacts, because I really have the ability to get out there, and I don't mind getting my hands dirty. I know a lot of people out there also have great product ideas, but they don't know where to go and what the next steps will be. So I'm thinking about working with folks to do that as well.
Yeah, because I've always said that if you're going to walk through a minefield, it's good to put your feet in the footsteps of somebody that successfully walked through there. So you've been through the process. You can really save folks a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of heartache knowing what to do and what not to do.
Exactly, and I have made a lot of mistakes, and I have paid for them, and I definitely think that if you can avoid some of those huge pitfalls, you can be more successful in a quicker time frame. A lot of the 3.5 years were spent kind of barking up the wrong trees, if you will.
Yeah, if you look at the end game and look at this, you know, for several years from now, have you thought about being acquired by a larger company and selling your company?
From your lips to God's ears, absolutely.
Okay, I haven't heard that one in a while. Because
my mom always says that. So
okay, that sounds really cool. Because I'm assuming that you've applied for a trademark for Dipe and Go.
Yes, I have.
Okay, that's good, because that's your brand, and that's part of what you'll be selling to some company somewhere, is you know, the customer recognition of that trade name.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, this has been super. How can folks get in touch with you, Rosemarie?
They can get in touch with me by checking out our product. Website address is www.dipengo.com, or they're more than welcome to email me at sales@dipe-n-go.com.
Okay, well, that's been super. Well, thanks for being on the show, Rosemarie and Edie. This has really been great.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, well, our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights. It's really a lot of golden nuggets, and they're going to find it very, very valuable. Another great show, Bill.
Gosh, Ron, it really was. It's fascinating to listen, and it's really fascinating, I think, for our listeners to really understand how long it really takes to get something going. You know, 3.5 years of trials and tribulations, and like Rosemarie said, barking up the wrong and right tree.
That's right.
Really something.
Yeah, it always takes years to be an overnight success.
That's right.
Well, a special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle. Go to our blog, thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com, to listen again to today's show, plus all our previous shows. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.